As he always tends to whenever there's a lot of justice activity going on in the Alberta government. Joining us is Justice Minister and Solicitor General Doug Schweitzer, and real busy week for you. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, thanks for having me on today.
All right, awesome. So let's just start with the first thing is that the Alberta government has decided to create a parole advisory board. Now, just talk about the forming of that, how that's going to go, and what the goal of the new parole board would be.
One of the things that we've heard from Albertans, particularly in rural communities, is they're tired of the revolving door justice system. So we're going to take ownership of our parole board here for the province of Alberta. We're going to create that under our provincial jurisdiction and make sure we have common sense people there on our parole board there when you're dealing with repeat offenders, particularly on property crime.
Okay, and I know that certain things, like a lot of the crimes, do follow under federal jurisdictions, or I believe that there's a certain time that if within 2 years or something like that, that after that, like after a two-year period, I believe it would be in the hands of the federal parole board. So for at least these types of property crimes, and I know like the theft of precious metals is something that also has been referenced, can the Alberta Parole Board be in a stronger position than, say, the federal board to deal with crimes like that?
Well, a lot of the property crimes, the sentences that are provided are less than 2 years. So that would fall into the provincial jurisdiction. So when we develop out and keep building on our rural crime strategy, this would feed into that, making sure we have people represented on that board that understand what's happening in our communities. This is about more Alberta and less Ottawa in our system of justice. Like, people here understand what's happening. They know what's happening on the ground. And there's a disconnect between Alberta and Ottawa. We hear that loud and clear, and people want their voices heard in the justice system.
Yeah, Minister, you did talk about the disconnect with Ottawa, and kind of in talking about that, I know you and your counterparts in other provinces have formed a committee, which you're a part of, in Justice Ministers, and in talking about that, is this also something that not only you, but your other counterparts in other provinces are pushing for, a little more independence? Because as you mentioned several times, one size does not fit all.
Yeah, our counterparts in Saskatchewan and many other provinces are taking a look at more autonomy within the provincial jurisdiction. There's a lot of frustration with how Ottawa is handling the justice file right now. And in particular, I mean, a lightning rod that just happened is how they approach firearms. That's one of the reasons why we started a firearms task force here, to give us advice on how to approach this issue with thought and care. The Premier's also announced as well that we're going to be exploring setting up a chief firearms officer for the province of Alberta, taking back that jurisdiction into our province.
Okay, and I guess and something of that too is that there's a little bit of a local flavor on that advisory board, and one of them is Central Peace Notley MLA Todd Lowen, and I guess specifically speaking to him, obviously a rural MLA. What are you hoping that Mr. Lowen can bring to the table?
Well, we just need to have common sense in this. And too many of these policies are developed in downtown Toronto, and they lack that common sense Alberta spirit that we have. And Todd is just a perfect example. He's got an outfitter background. He's a responsible firearm user. He gets the common sense, practical nature that Albertans use all the time. So having him there to give us advice is really important for us to developing out our policies. So that's one big piece of it. The other thing, too, is that we're exploring supporting some legal challenges. We've got different groups that are launching challenges to the firearms changes that the Fed's brought in. We're looking at playing a supporting role in that and helping those ones along the way. Plus, as well, we have the federal government is looking at bringing in new legislation once they get back to sitting in Ottawa and dealing with firearms. This group is going to give us a lot of advice and help along the way.
Okay, and I guess also another thing with the firearms is that we know that that there was a decision made on the banning of several firearms made by Ottawa. And in saying that, though, it kind of turned law-abiding gun owners into possession of essentially illegal property overnight. So in saying that too, is there at least anything in terms of that, is there any way that maybe the province can possibly intervene from a legal perspective to say, hey, these legal people should not have to turn in their weapons?
Well, a lot of this was litigated back in the 90s under Ralph Klein, and the Supreme Court weighed in a larger decision in federal jurisdiction. But that being said, individual citizens probably have a better ability to potentially push back through a court challenge. So we'd be looking at maybe supporting, a citizens group that's trying to challenge these laws. But that being said, just this week we announced a $500,000 investment in a ballistics lab to do testing on firearms, to take the time from about 8+ months to get a firearms test under the RCMP down to a couple of weeks. So for $500,000, we're going to do more to combat illegal gun crimes and making sure we can prosecute our cases than the hundreds of millions of dollars that Justin Trudeau is going to be using to target law-abiding Albertans. this is smart policy versus just, you know, more virtue signaling from our federal government.
All right, and now moving on to another one is that I know we've chatted about this before, and that is the backlog in the Alberta's justice system, and I see that Bill 21 that was introduced could do something about that, including the Provincial Administrative Penalties Act as well, and making roads safer. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so what we're doing here, BC has a bit of a different framework that they put in place to help streamline how they deal with impaired driving, and it's actually proven to be amazing policy. It's saving lives in BC. So this is just simply a way to save lives, but the other benefit of it is that it reduces the amount of cases going into our courts. It takes out about 8 to 10% of the cases going into our provincial court, which will then allow us to focus more on the, you know, the serious assaults, the murders, and making sure that those cases are handled within the time constraints that we have to get cases to trial. So it's really helpful there. Plus, we're also going to be doing is taking, there's 2 million traffic tickets issued every single year. Those right now go through courts. About 500,000 of them actually go into our court system. You don't need a judge and a sheriff and prosecutors there dealing with a traffic ticket. Like, these are just common sense solutions that we're looking at to make sure our justice system is proportional to what the offenses are.
Okay, and I guess also looking at that as well is that one thing that we know that happened that every single court around the world probably had this is that obviously the pandemic really, really slowed things down. One thing I'm kind of curious about is that when you're dealing with a public health emergency, does the time on the clock for cases to be heard still keep on ticking, or was that frozen in time, or how would that have worked?
Well, along with our chief justices, we've sent a letter to Ottawa to the federal justice minister to bring in legislation to declare that in this emergency, the clock should stop. I believe that the courts will find that on their own, but to help provide clarity to all the criminal defense lawyers that may try to abuse the pandemic to get a benefit for their clients, to make sure we get clarity on that, we've asked the federal government to bring in legislation to give us that little bit of runway here to get the courts back up and running at full capacity.
All right, and I know one of your measures in order to increase justice and access to justice included the hiring of prosecutors. Now, I know that sometimes provincial solicitor generals and attorney generals, one thing that they were able to do is that they'll sometimes attend the graduating classes for law students in their respective provinces. They'll speak to them and give them some things, and I know that that's been a recruiting tool, and is that something, number one, that you've done, and number two, is it even possible to try to do that recruiting to try to keep, say, you know, Alberta law students in Alberta? Are you able to still do that even during this pandemic?
Well, one of the things that we successfully did was actually grow our ranks of students coming in to be lawyers of the government. So we saw that we have to hire 50-plus new prosecutors. It's one of our campaign commitments. But 50 criminal lawyers don't necessarily exist in Alberta right now to hire. It's a lot of lawyers. So we need to train more as they come in. So we increased our article and student caseload. Next year, we're going to have 20 young lawyers coming into the system spread out across all of Alberta.
And I'm going to go back, I guess, a little bit, because I remember way back last year, your predecessor had questioned you about when these prosecutors would be hired. And I was just going to, I guess the question to you is that the day when you were sworn in on April 30th of 2019, how much were you left with, and how much were you left with to fill in terms of prosecution positions, among others?
Yeah, we were down about 20 to 30 prosecutors, below where we should have been. And plus, you have to got to fill the backlog and then hire 50 more. So that's another reason why getting these young students in the door helps us, you know, every year get a pipeline of good young talent coming in. We're hiring now. We're continuing to fill positions across Alberta, but it's still a work in progress.
All right, awesome. And I guess now usually we manage to avoid the partisan talk on this one, but there was certainly, I know, one tweet that got definitely the irk of some people in this region, and that is if I can have it right in front of me here, where Gil McGowan, who is the president with the Alberta Federation of Labor, saying the UCP paves the way for nut bar religious charter schools and homeschooling that doesn't follow the curriculum, creating an army of brainwashed right-wing warriors. And I know there's quite a few people up here that took offense to that. And is that something, I know that I saw even in question period, that they were asking for an apology from this? Do you find that kind of language coming from, you know, a prominent Albertan offensive?
Well, it just is offensive. This out is offensive. And the thing that actually a note as well is that this person's on the board of the NDP. This is a senior ranking official in the NDP, and they wouldn't condemn it. Now, here's the party of the NDP. They like to virtue signal all the time about how forward thinking they are. But yet, when it comes to standing up for people of faith, for people that want to educate their kids in the best way for their own children,
They won't say a word. They won't condemn it. It's shameful.
Awesome. Thank you for always. Thank you, Minister. Anything else you'd like to add while we have you on the line?
No, I appreciate you taking the time, and make sure everybody gets outdoors safely these days. Enjoy the summer while we got it.